with Harry Broadhurst and Tony Acetti.
Gentlemen, welcome into the Raw Reaction. I am your host, Harry Broadhurst. Tony, are you with me?
I'm right here, man.
All right, welcome in. Tony Acero, and we are live here on Powerhouse Radio for the Raw Reaction. Tony, let's talk about Raw.
Let's do this.
We seem to say that a lot. Well, it's kind of what we do here on the Reaction. Anywho, all right. So obviously the big breaking news, according to you, was, where has Santino been? And then I responded to you, if you watch SmackDown, he came back on SmackDown, he was on Raw tonight as well, let's move on. In all seriousness, the big news from tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw is the official confirmation that Daniel Bryan's progress from his neck surgery is not going the way that they want to, and he has now been stripped of the WWE World Heavyweight title. Tony, your thoughts?
It's actually kind of tough, you know. I wrote about it about a month ago regarding Daniel Bryan and his, you know, all the stuff that he's gone through, everything from his father dying to getting married, because, you know, that's as depressing as death. The reality that his reign, his first reign, you know, as a true champion, isn't going over well. So it is one of those situations where I feel they actually tried to do everything they could to give him the title. But at the same time, you know, as heelish as it came off with the, you know, a long diatribe of Triple H, they're kind of right. This isn't the Daniel Bryan fan show, fan club. This is a show in which they need a fighting champion, and, you know, if there's no telling when Bryan will be able to compete, you know, then they're doing the right thing. It's just one of those situations where it really sucks because, you know, it was his time to shine, and we can say how they took too long, how he should have won months ago, last year, blah, 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 but the fact is that's not what happened. This is what we have now. This is what we're dealing with. So, you know, you take it or you leave it. It's kind of sad, but we have to do what we have to do, basically.
Yeah, I agree with you here. I mean, it's unfortunate that they have to take the title away here, but at the same time, you can't go almost 3 full months without having a defending WWE heavyweight champion. I understand the whole the belts are kind of just their thing, but in an era where they're trying to reestablish certain titles, where you see guys that are on the crest of greatness, guys like Cesaro being pushed towards the titles, Bad News Barrett, who has a rejuvenated push and is the Intercontinental Champion. And we'll talk more about Bad News Barrett and Sheamus' match here, because I know you had something you wanted to say about that. Even Sheamus, in order to help reestablish him, in an era where they're trying to reestablish the titles, you cannot not have your World Heavyweight Champion defending the titles either on the shows or on the special events on the network or people still ordering on pay-per-view as well through their local cable providers. It is an unfortunate circumstance that they found themselves in with Bryan's injury, but there's nothing they can do at this point. It had to be done. And as you said, as heelish as the promo came off of, it was out of necessity rather than probably desire for Triple H, the person, to actually want to do this.
Right. And, you know, I thought the opening segment felt way too long. It was a little bit disjointed. I don't know if it was the week before last or last week where Triple H no, it was the week before last. It was the one before Payback. And he kind of put together a nice promo that seamlessly ran into each other from Bryan to the Shield. But this one just seemed a little disjointed. But in regards to their promo as heels, I mean, it came off as good as it could, I assume, particularly because Stephanie, she's just been, you know, her saying Brie basically quit for no reason was funny. So, yeah, it runs along the lines of them continuing to put him down to the point where when he does come back, there could still be a story to be told.
Oh, I don't think we've seen the last of the Daniel Bryan World Heavyweight title situation, but I think for now it's something that we're going to have to move on and come back to once Bryan is fully healthy and able to withstand the rigors of the WWE travel schedule. So let's talk about the situation we now find ourselves in, Tony.
Okay.
Money in the Bank on June 29th, we will see it looked like 7-man from the graphic, but I'm guessing it'll probably be 8. Money in the Bank ladder match where the titles will be hung above the ring. Your thoughts on the fact that the Money in the Bank will be for the title, and do you think that there'll be a separate Money in the Bank ladder match where it's the briefcase on the line at some point, either at this show or later on in the year?
I mean, you know, Money in the Bank, the title itself means there's a Money in the Bank match. This is essentially a ladder match. There, you know, it's not a special Money in the Bank 7 or 8-man ladder match. It's literally a ladder match. So I don't know if they're gonna have, they've been walking all around it. They haven't said there's gonna be another one. They haven't said there isn't gonna be another one. I assume that they would want one, and it would be nice to see, you know, someone like Barrett or Ziggler, who lost these qualifying matches, get an opportunity to get that that briefcase that really can make someone jump the next level if done right. But I don't know. Having a main event ladder match on Money in the Bank, it seems like that's what they feel they should do. But I just think that there's a lot missing if they don't have an actual Money in the Bank match.
This is a point that I talked about with Sean Garmer and Paul Lazare and Gary Vaughn over on the Wrestling to the Matches podcast, which, by the way, you can check them out on the Wrestling to the Match Facebook page as well. They're kind enough to plug us on their podcast, so we're going to return the favor here. And the thought came up of possibly doing maybe a King of the Ring with the Money in the Bank contract on the line in that. Would that be something you'd support?
I like King of the Rings, but I don't know. It just seems like the Money in the Bank match itself, if it's gone, if they put it somewhere else throughout the year, then I just I think that it wouldn't be as important as it would be on a pay-per-view with its name on it. Then again, you know, them changing the name to Money in the Bank just booked themselves into a situation where this is the type of problem that happens. You have a pay-per-view that is named after an event that you may not even have on the card. It's like a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view without a Hell in a Cell match. And then this is their fault. They never had to name it Money in the Bank, but yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be opposed to a King of the Ring type match, but I really do feel that they're going to be missing out if they don't have a literal Money in the Bank match.
I honestly could see the Money in the Bank ladder match actually still happening, like you said, with the men who didn't win their qualifying matches, because that would put people like a Dolph Ziggler, like a Wade Barrett, like a Rob Van Dam, who lost to Cesaro this evening. And I got to say, I was kind of surprised that Cesaro's in Money in the Bank now that it's for the title, because I know the original plan was to put the briefcase on him, but I don't think that they're going to be willing to give him the heavyweight title yet. So I'll be interested to see where they go with this, especially at the pay-per-view itself, to see if they decide to give the fans the second ladder match on the pay-per-view as we've had in previous years, and have this one right here be for the Money in the Bank briefcase specifically.
Yeah. Well, who do you think the other entrants are going to be?
I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of the guys that we've seen kind of slip out of the limelight get a spot in this match. One of the big names that I think that they're going to want to push and possibly put in this match will be a returning Mike Mizanin, The Miz. Miz has a history in these Money in the Bank ladder matches as well, so that could tie in perfectly to his return. As far as other people that I could see possibly entering the match, I don't think there's any question that Cena will probably end up in this. There's talk of Bray Wyatt getting entered into this match, and I don't know if that's a good idea, because he just never struck me as the kind of guy to go after the title. Would you be opposed to seeing Wyatt in a Money in the Bank ladder match, the ladder match for the title in this case? And if so, maybe who would you see as a possible person that could step up and fill that role?
in this match, I would be opposed to it. I don't think that there's enough motivation for Wyatt to even care about it. Obviously, as a wrestler, you will always want to be the biggest, you know, the top dog. You want the title. And that's not saying that he'll never want it or he'll never go after it. But with him being reborn in a new vision and whatnot, I don't believe that vision has anything to do with the belt. So he would have to realign his focus in such a way that made us believe it. And I don't think they can do that in a matter of weeks or, you know, even 2-3 weeks. I just don't see it happening, nor do I want to see it happen. I don't think I think he's ready for it, but I don't think we're ready for it. You know what I mean? Like, there's still a lot of legs for that character to be at this level that he's at right now, which is just under the main event, but still working with main event people. You know, you don't want to shoot your wad too soon, you know? So I don't think he should be in the Money in the Bank match just yet.
All right. How about people like The Miz and John Cena?
Well, I don't care about The Miz. But seeing him, I wouldn't mind. I know he's not going to win. I know that he would just be an able body that would help out everyone else. John Cena, I don't want to see him in the Money in the Bank. I didn't want to see him tonight with the Shield. I don't want to see him, period. But in terms of him being in the match, I do believe it's most likely. I mean, we've got heels all over the place. We are going to need a face or two, so I believe he's going to be one of them, unless they're trying to make John Cena the new foil of the Authority, in which I can see them screwing him out of the opportunity and giving someone his spot, maybe even Wyatt, like you were alluding to. But
I had heard potential talk of the fact that since Brian's not able to face Kane now, and now that Cena's the man that stood up to Stephanie last week in that seemingly awkward place segment there, that maybe Cena will move into the match with Kane. Do you think there's any possibility that that might actually happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see it happening. I don't, again, it's not a deflation of excitement. I am excited for the match, regardless of the two people that are going to be in it that we don't know. It's just it's one of those, like, aw shucks things, you know? It's like, that it's too damn bad that this is the route that we have to go. Money in the Bank itself it lends to excitement. Daniel Bryan as a champion made everybody happy. And now, I don't think the WWE is panicking, but I think they're reverting back to the old instead of creating new. And that's where I get really worried when John Cena starts to scan by the Shield or there's a possibility of him being in the Money in the Bank. It's not that his time is done or that he doesn't have the drawing power. It's just that they're going back to this cyclical way of booking things where there's no one new being built up. And one could argue that Cesaro being in the match is a great way to do it, or that Barrett is, you know, the IC champ and he's doing his things and whatnot. But I see them being so trepidatious of making someone new as long as they have Cena. But the dude, what, he injured his eye this, you know, a couple of days ago or yesterday, and, you know, they had to, I mean, what if it's worse than that? What if they don't have Cena? What if they don't have Bryan and Cena? Like, who can they put in that place? I don't see anyone, and it's their fault. So I don't see why they're so afraid.
You have to think that if Cena does go down with any kind of substantial permanent injury, it's going to A, lead to the skyrocketing of Roman Reigns, and B, lead to them probably begging CM Punk to return.
Yeah.
Just because at that point, who else do you have as a dependable face that can carry the top of the card on the roster at the present moment? The answer to that is probably nobody.
Mm-hmm. That's the issue. They continuously run into it. Why can't you, you know, there's always going to be a one person, you know, there's always going to be that one Hogan or Rock or Stone Cold or Cena, you know, but look at Rock and Austin. They were both, you know, huge. And I remember I was in high school and there were people that loved the Rock. There were people that loved Stone Cold, you know, and you don't have that right now. You have John Cena and that's it. You know, there's a possibility of making stars. They just, I don't know if they don't know how, they don't want to, they're afraid to, or they feel complacent with having John Cena be as big as he is. But it causes issues, just like right now where I feel, and this is my personal opinion, that as good as the show can be, come Money in the Bank, they're, you know, it's not nowhere near as exciting as having an actual Money in the Bank match or having Daniel Bryan defend his title, even if it is against Kane. Like, it's just, it's a little bit depressing is too strong of a word, but it's kind of sad.
Well, I think we can both agree that the match against Kane at Extreme Rules was a lot better than we all probably thought it was going to be, though.
Definitely.
So it would have been interesting for me to see what they could have done in the stretcher match had Brian been able to make it back on time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a slow weekend around this place, Tony. You're in luck.
Well, yeah, we were alluding to the Money in the Bank and the fact that Sheamus was going to be in it and everything. And so we had qualifying matches tonight. And one of them was Sheamus versus Barrett, United States champion versus Intercontinental champion. I don't even think that was mentioned aside from the fact that they're carrying the belt. And although I don't get as bothered by this as, you know, the god of 411, Larry Sonka, I do find it a little bit disturbing the fact that these guys just won these secondary belts, and, you know, it's kind of like they're going for the big one, but what about the belts that they currently carry? What does that, you know, and not only that, but
that's not cool.
It should be a big deal. It should be a big deal that, you know, the U.S. champ is fighting the Intercontinental champion. It should be something, I don't want to say.
Sorry to cut you off here real quick, Tony, but I just wanted to step in. They did actually briefly mention, they mentioned it as they went into commercial right before the match that it was champion versus champion.
Yeah, I'm sure they mentioned it. I remember seeing the graphic. What I'm saying is, like, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal at all. There was no, you know, heightened suspense because of the fact that these guys are higher ranking than others below them, or because either one of them hold the title, or how important, you know, they see themselves as the champion of whatever of their respective belts. It's minimal. The bothersome, you know, effect of it is minimal for me. I can talk about it for 5 minutes. I can talk about it for 2 seconds, and it wouldn't matter. However, what I will, you know, accentuate is the fact that I really, really think Wade Barrett should have won this match. He took a gimmick that probably shouldn't have worked, and he's making it work to the point that he's a heel and people are chanting along with him. He's taking the ball that they were giving him and he ran with it, similar to someone else in the show that you'll talk about later. So I felt like he deserved the win. He deserved to be in the Money in the Bank. Was he going to win? No. Does it matter? No. Because is Sheamus going to win? No. So why not give Wade that exposure, that opportunity, that chance to say, hey, I can work in the main event. I can do this. You know, I don't know why they didn't. I don't see any downside of doing so, nor do I see any upside of having Sheamus take the win. Do you agree? Do you care?
Well, the main thing about Sheamus being in the match is we've actually seen both of these men in Money in the Bank matches before in these ladder match environments. If you recall, when Daniel Bryan won his briefcase back in 2011, the man that he knocked off the ladder in order to retrieve the briefcase was none other than Wade Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
And Sheamus had his issues in the Money in the Bank ladder match. I believe it was at the 2013 event in Philadelphia where Sheamus took that bump off the top rope onto the ladder, and actually that's what started his shoulder injury, which took him out until Rumble of this year. So I think they would be a little bit more hesitant to put Sheamus back into this ladder match given the circumstances that went down with Sheamus a year ago. But at the same time, between the two of them, realistically speaking, they're both big body competitors, big guys in the ladder match where the match obviously favors the smaller guys. So technically speaking, I think they're interchangeable. Would giving the win to Barrett have made more sense? I think so, because these two just had a match on SmackDown, I think it was, a couple weeks ago. That Sheamus won as well. So realistically speaking, you're outright saying that the U.S. title is better than the Intercontinental title at this point, because the Intercontinental champion cannot beat the U.S. champion.
Yeah, and not only that, you know, I don't want to side with the rumors of Sheamus being Triple H's workout buddy, which is why he's getting this push and whatnot. He's a great wrestler. He's a great talent, and he could take a beating as well as give one realistically and have the entire match look great. He had an awesome match with Wade Barrett tonight. It was great. However, like, I mean, the question that I keep asking is, what does he add to the event that Wade Barrett couldn't? You know, and that's the issue that I have. Sheamus is essentially a made man, you know. He doesn't really need an invigorating push to make us believe that he belongs in the main event. Guess who does? Wade Barrett. Because he's been damaged, because he's been, you know, he's been revisioned. He's got this new look and attitude. So he needs a chance to show that he's not just a mid-card dude with, you know, the IC title. He needs a little bit more if they want him up there, which I don't see why they wouldn't. He's a good talent. He's relatively young. And it goes back to what I said at the beginning of the show. You need more people. You need bigger stars. You know, why not, basically?
I have a quick question for you as far as the Bad News Barrett gimmick goes. Do you think that this is a gimmick that they'll eventually be able to get over as a babyface?
I think with slight tweaking that they can. It wouldn't be a face in the vein of John Cena just, you know, loving life and kissing children, but it would be someone that the fans would get behind. They already are in some cases, and
that's what
I can
I'm
see.
Saying.
Yeah, I could see them definitely having that work out if done right, and it's possible. And he, you know, the talent himself, I'm sure he'd be able to pull it off.
Speaking of people who impending face turns may be ahead of them, we'll touch on that again a little bit later in the show. We got a lot more to come for you guys today. The Harry's Hit is still to come. Tony's second and third dues. We'll talk more about Raw. In addition, we will have your final reaction here. And much more here on the Raw Reaction. He's Tony Acero. I'm Harry Broadhurst. We're going to take you to a quick break here. And since I usually let you pick, I'm going to go ahead and pick the song this time, Tony.
Go ahead.
Hold on. First, there's going to be a sound effect. Oh, where is it at? Ah, this is killing me. Forget it. I'll find the sound effect when we come back from the break. Let's go to a musical interlude right now. We'll be right back with more of the Raw Reaction right after this here on Powerhouse Radio.
Sierra Hotel.
India.
Echo.
Lima.
Delta.
Shield.
On Powerhouse Radio, Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero. Hey, Tony.
Yes.
Would you like to know why I got to pick the music this time?
Why did you get to pick the music?
That's what I do!
All right. Makes sense.
It took me a few seconds to find that soundbite.
It happens. Yeah, I, you know, well, before we get started, I believe we have some people to give it a little shout-out to, you know, got to pay those bills.
Indeed, that's my cue. The Raw Reaction is an association, okay, that's my first one tonight, so I'm doing okay. The Raw Reaction is a production of Powerhouse Radio, www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. In addition, you can find them on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. Speaking of Facebook, we are also closely affiliated with both the Wrestling to the Max group, which is ran by Sean Garmer, who filled in for Tony a couple weeks ago, as well as the Yes, Yes, Yes Facebook group, which is my own creation, something I'm kind of proud of. Tony and I can also be found on Facebook as well, Tony Massaro, Harry Broadhurst. And Tony, why don't you go ahead and tell them about what you do for 411 Mania?
I entertain the masses way better than anyone else on that site. No, I do the Wrestling 5-on-1 on a weekly basis. I also have the Raw Report, which is up. I sit here and type out word for word what happened so that you don't have to watch it if you don't want to. This week I found a couple of Bo Dallas pictures that coincide with a few of the famous memes that have been running around. I thought that was entertaining. And I don't know if you saw this, Harry, but there was someone that one of the comments asked me to find a picture of Layla with milk all over her, spread-legged, because, you know, the people that read the Raw Report are wrestling fans, which means that they're most likely perverted. So in looking for that picture, I found a little, you know, you can ask questions on Yahoo and people will answer them. So upon searching for that image, which I'm sure will come out in about an hour somewhere, I found a Yahoo question, and let me just tell you what the question was. It was wonderful. I hope that this is a 12-year-old kid. Now that Summer Rae spilled a lot of milk on Layla, is Layla going to smell like milk when she sleeps with Fandango tonight? I think she will. Even if she takes a shower, I think there will be some sort of milk smell when she sleeps with Fandango tonight. She deserves it, though. I used to have a crush on Layla, but since she joined Fandango and turned mean, she isn't attractive anymore. Wow.
I'm sorry, we're talking about my little English muffin here. She could come over here smelling like all the milk she'd want to smell like, and I still wouldn't say no. I don't give a
damn. I don't know.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it was a 12-year-old that said that. I'm not sure, but I'm gonna go with that. Yeah, so I just wanted to point that out. You know.
That or a Shimmer fan. Anyway, have you seen some of the people that consist of that audience? Yikes.
Yeah, I have.
Tony, let's talk about Raw.
All right. So we got the other big moment of the show.
Yes, let's talk about two things here. We'll get into talking about Raw here, but both of the songs that I picked today actually happened for a reason. Mr. Perfect's music played because they were in Minneapolis tonight, and Minnesota is where the Hennig made their name. As a quick aside to that, I have a funny feeling I know who Goldust's partner is going to be next week.
Oh, yeah?
I'm officially going to guess that it'll be a masked Cody Rhodes.
That would be dashing.
It needs to be. Just do something with it. Put him in a gimmick, call him dashing something, so that way everybody knows it's Cody. I mean, even though Goldust would have to be kind of an idiot not to realize it. And then have Cody prove, because this would be the perfect opportunity there, have Cody get the pin, and then Cody can turn on Goldust after the match and prove that it wasn't me all along, it was you.
I think it'd be cool. I mean, I haven't had an actual guess as to who it would be. I was curious as how he was going to magnify the magnificence, but that does sound something like something a dashing Cody Rhodes would say. So that'd be pretty interesting.
Indeed. That and the dashing Cody Rhodes character was awesome, so I think that we need to bring that back.
He taught me how to properly trim a mustache.
Grooming tips from the dashing one on WWE.com. Anywho, the other music that I played was The Shield, and let's talk about that some more right now.
With the breakup of the Shield having happened with Seth Rollins is turning the last week, we had Seth in the ring for an in-ring promo here because you knew that they weren't going to waste that on SmackDown.
Of course not.
You mentioned when we were doing the talk, discussing the format for this show here, that you felt that Seth didn't say a whole lot. And I'm going to go ahead and let you explain why you feel that way, and then I'm going to tell you why I disagree.
All right. Well, I mean, this was a huge turn. People compared it to Hulk Hogan joining the NWO. Even Chad Perry last week said those exact words. I can't go that far, but it was a really big turn. It was something that was shocking legitimately, and it came off really well. And it was one of those things where you're like, a lot of people were saying, okay, you know, maybe it shouldn't have been Seth. Maybe it should have been. Maybe they shouldn't have done it now. Maybe they should have. Whatever. The point is it happened. And the only way that this was going to work was the follow-up. I feel that they didn't do a sufficient enough job to explain why he turned. Did they give him, they gave him the most generic reasoning, which is exactly what everyone says when they turn. You know, he's looking out for him. He did what was best for him, what was best for business for him. And that's all well and good, but like what made him do it at that particular moment? Now I can take all of this back if next week they give a much more compelling or desired response or answer. But as it stands right now, if we're reacting to just Raw, because that's what we do, then I feel that the promo itself just lacked any actual reasoning. You can say that he was standing up for his individuality, and that would be fine, but it doesn't explain what he did because he could have done it months ago. He could have done it. Why now? What is the motive now? What is the motivation now? A few things that I did like was the fact that he said he created the Shield. He can break it down. I love that part. I love the fact that they amplified the idea that he was really the person who concocted this entire situation. So in a sense, he could have always been looking out for himself. However, that's not how it's been portrayed. That's not how it's been, spelled out. They haven't been on a losing streak. There wasn't something that made him look like the loser or the third man. Everything was going fine in terms of their growth, kayfabe. So what is his motive other than the individuality, other than him being on his own? What is, you know, what for? And that's why I couldn't fully take it as the best response to the turn.
I'm going to tell you exactly why I disagree with your line of thinking here. What is the reason for Seth's turn, you ask? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Belief in Seth Rollins. A couple weeks ago, in the build-up to the Shield and the Evolution, the first match, Roman Reigns said that he was going to teach Evolution to believe in the Shield and to believe in me. Roman Reigns went above and beyond the group concept of the Shield by stating that he wanted to single-handedly make an impression on Triple H, on Randy Orton, and on Batista as far as who Roman Reigns was and not just who the Shield was. I think that is your catalyst for Seth Rollins' turn.
But Seth Rollins was the mastermind behind the Shield. But perhaps Seth felt that Roman Reigns' ego was stepping out of check with that very line. Your thoughts?
I could fully agree with you and still stand by my statement. Mainly because if that's the case, then why wasn't it said? That's a very logical explanation. It makes sense. It's actually more compelling than anything he said tonight. And if it is the truth, if it is something that, you know, that stands out, like I said, I'm hoping that they come out with a little bit more in the coming weeks. Of course, maybe they don't want to give it all away right now, but in terms of your explanation, if that is true, which I see no reason why it wouldn't be, why wouldn't he explain that? Why wouldn't he say that? Not as if giving him a reason, like, you know, he can heal it up. I don't have to give you any reason. I don't have to say anything. But the direction that he's going makes me think that that's one of the first things that he would say. You know, I created this. You're overstepping your boundaries here, so I cut you guys off. That's it. That's my, you know, that's his reasoning. That's his statement. That didn't come out this way. They didn't come out that way, aside from the one statement that you're highlighting. So I feel that they, at least tonight, missed the opportunity to make it logical reason. It basically, it was just underwhelming. That's all. It wasn't incomplete. It wasn't gone. It was just underwhelming.
Speaking of underwhelming here, and I'll get back to my theory as far as the Seth Rollins goes here, his new music, I already don't like it. It's metal enough, it's angry enough for him, but I think they could do better for him, especially as far as music goes, and especially coming off the Shield, where they have arguably the best music in the WWE right now, maybe behind Tangled Up in Love, which for the Wyatt family.
Yeah, knowing the WWE, we're going to hear like 5-6 different songs before they settle on one. So, we'll see.
And now back to Seth Rollins here. He actually did do the You Guys Don't Deserve an Excuse reasoning on SmackDown on Friday night. Now, you don't watch SmackDown, so you obviously didn't get a chance to see that. I didn't get a chance to watch SmackDown either, but I read the report on 411 from, I think Larry covered it this week.
Probably.
And Seth announced then that You Guys Didn't Deserve a reasoning. And then that's when the original picture of him in the suit that he came out in tonight on Raw came out as well. What I do want to talk about this whole thing here, the absolutely blow-away mic work by one Dean Ambrose tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Roman Reigns' promo was solid enough in and of itself, but Dean Ambrose has stood out to me. Because that was the first time that we've actually seen the beginning of like the maturation process into almost the 2014 Brian Pillman that we've discussed before.
Right.
Do you think that this might be the start of Dean Ambrose standing out more along the lines of his own individuality instead of being as a part of the Shield?
Yeah, I do. I do think so. I think that this was his. This was one of those. Let's throw these two guys out there, give them the mic, and see what happens. And what happened was they proved themselves that they can stand metaphorically, on their own and literally without Seth Rollins. Like they were able to, like, if you were to break the Wyatts up, would they be able to survive? I'm not 100% sure. Harper and
Luke Harper, yes. Eric Rowan, probably not at this point.
Yeah, and then you look at the Shield, and we're at a moment right now where these three as a unit are no longer, it just doesn't exist anymore. You need to know if Ambrose and Reigns can handle it on their own. And I think that tonight, they alluded to a few matches. Reigns literally said, I'm going to take Orton out and then go for Triple H. Ambrose said, I'm going to tear your nose off and put it where your one ear is because you won't have an ear. You won't have to because I'm going to tear one off. So those matches are coming is all that I could think of. Ambrose versus Rollins, Reigns versus Orton, leading to Triple H versus Reigns at SummerSlam. Particularly Ambrose. A couple comments I read in the Raw report that he just needed to tone it down a bit, that it was a bit too much, but those were few and far between because realistically Ambrose has been that guy ever since he set foot on television, in the WWE, and well before that. The dude has a handle on exactly who.
I was going to say there, he was that guy before Dean Ambrose even existed. He was that guy as John Moxley on the independent circuit.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, he knows exactly what he wants to be in that ring, and he was finally able to talk like he's been wrestling. You know the little, like, hit the bottom rope, bounce back, and hit, attack? The mauling that he does, he did it tonight, where it looked like a Luthez press, but he wasn't able to press. He just kind of hopped in Rowan's arms and attacked. He's erratic in the ring, but it's amazing because everything, I can only imagine how much of it is actually choreographed in his mind. This is how it's going to look. And, organized chaos in a way is one of the best ways to see wrestling. It just looks awesome. Same thing with his promo. It was wild. It was out there. It was, full of hyperbole and exaggerated maneuvers and movements and just a particular panache of nastiness, like one that only he can really possess as opposed to any other wrestler that tried to cut that promo. I could see how someone would say, yeah, it's over the top or he's stretching it. But Ambrose, no, that's the character that he has built, and I can't wait to see more of it.
Yeah, I'm completely with you here. Dean Ambrose showed who Dean Ambrose was tonight, and people can say that it was over the top, that it was too much, that it was too graphic. No, that's who Dean Ambrose is, and as we've mentioned before, we feel that Dean Ambrose can be the modern inclination
of the loose cannon Brian Pillman, with a very modern twist to it. And tonight was the very first step as far as the individual process of that happening, rather than him being part of the loose cannon of the Shield. Now he's stepping out into that role on his own without having Rollins there as support.
Right. And also another thing is how much they flirted with the line of the ratings. I mean, you know, we as adults, we listen to these statements, and it's not a big deal, you know, ripping a nose off or an ear. I'm a writer. Like, I write, you know, violence in my, you know, writing a lot. So it's really a desensitized nature that we hear these promos and think, yeah, whatever. But you gotta think, like, some of this stuff, I'm not saying it wasn't PG, it definitely was, but at the same time, this was one of the more descriptive promos in a long time. This wasn't, I'm going to beat you and show you who the better man was. This is, I'm going to disfigure your face and put your nose where your ear is. And, like you know, in some cases, it was kind of, I don't want to say graphic, because that would be exaggerating. But different enough, and something that we just haven't heard in a long time, the intensity, the emotion behind it, the realization that this dude is pissed the fuck off.
Didn't he also threaten to shove the ear down his mouth, which would be easy because he would have already knocked all the teeth out of it?
Exactly what I'm saying. Like, the dude, like, described complete dismember and disfigurement of another man's face. And then, you know, I mean, and then Roman Reigns does one of the, a reference to a show that actually still exists, you know, Game of Thrones, where essentially it's one of the most violent shows on TV right now. It was like, this is a whole new level, guys. This is a whole new level of ass kicking. This isn't just some, you know, grudge match. This is turning into a blood match. Like it makes everything more important. It makes everything more intense. And that also lends a huge hand to how impactful those promos were.
I can only think of one word that I can choose to best describe Reigns and Ambrose's mic work tonight, and it's the biggest compliment that I can pay both of these men. The one word that I can think of is captivating.
Mm-hmm.
Because both of them had my attention undivided for the entirety of their promos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seriously. And then
that's the compliment that I could pay them.
The reality of everything, whether Seth was able to explain himself fully to my liking or not, you saw three men who were a group turn into three men who may very well be the future of the company. That's really hard to do. And I have to lend a hand to them, the men behind the characters, just because they have such a good handle on who they are and who they want to be portrayed at. I think it's one of the rare things to see. And if we see them in 5 years as multi-world champs or even just one time or whatever it may be, but still in the upper echelon of the card, then I think that we can look back on these moments right now and be really happy to be a fan of theirs.
Yeah, almost basically the evolution of the Shield, you could call it.
Right.
Speaking of promo goodness from this evening.
Yeah, there seems to be a huge love for Lana right now in the wrestling world. In the Wrestling 5-in-1, every week we have a versus. And it's one diva, former, future, you know, former or present, regardless of the company. It could be Shimmer, TNA, WWE, whatever. They go up against another one. And if they win 4 weeks in a row, they get to face someone in the Hall of Bang, which is essentially seven women that are in the WWE that are in the wrestling world that people want to have sex with. Now, I didn't create this format. I actually, it's my least favorite part of the column, not because I don't like women, not because I'm a feminist, simply because it takes so damn long to find images and cut them and paste them and all that other shit. But what I saw last month was that Lana. Yeah. I don't even think he made it up. But Lana beat out four women in a row and then slaughtered Velvet Sky. And she's now in the Hall of Bang. Now, what I've come to learn after doing this for a number of years is that there's equal parts flavor of the month as well as natural beauty that help the females get to where they're at in this little mini contest within the column. However, you know, what you and I talked about it briefly, the woman behind Lana, CJ Parker is her name. She's
Perry.
Hot. Perry. Okay. CJ something or other.
CJ Perry.
She's hot. Lana, I don't really like the bun and the eyebrows and the red lips and whatnot. She's pretty. But in terms of character, the girl's got it down. She's bigger than Rusev will ever be, honestly.
Oh,
she went out
no
there.
Yeah,
her promo was longer than his match. And let's just set aside the fact that her ass is wonderful. And just, dude, she ripped on the president of America, showed that now famous YouTube video of him working out, looking all kinds of lanky. I mean, I know that the WWE can get political at times. I know that they like to take jabs at politics and whatnot. I also know that Obama's been on the screen at one point or another, and this conversation will not be political at all. However, that's a ballsy promo, and it was also very awesome. Just saying how badass Putin was, showing a shirtless picture of him, comparing that to Obama working out, I think the entire – it was gold. It was great. They say – a lot of people say that the anti-American gimmicks just don't work anymore. They just don't make any sense, but this woman – is pulling it off.
A couple of things about that. A, yeah, Lana's doing a fantastic job here. In regards to what you said about her having more heat, more over than Rusev will ever be, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind. And we've had the discussion before, too, that I've said to you that I think if there ever comes a point where they decide to turn her into a babyface, she's going to be a superstar. Because she has a great look when she's not in the Lana character. She clearly can handle the mic. The only question is can she work? And
that's actually what I was
going to
ask you, because I figured you would know. I don't. I figured you would know. Does she had any in-ring experience?
To my knowledge, the answer to that is no. But with the people that they have down in NXT right now doing the job that they've done there, because we've had this discussion before about the job that Sarah Del Rey's done with the women in NXT, I wouldn't be surprised to see her turn into something special.
Yeah. Yeah, I have full faith in actual training. I mean, I think that, you know, look at Trish Stratus, you know. If she had it, then I think she'd be amazing.
And, I think she'll be a superstar. And even if you think about it here, though, the two breakout stars originally from the WWF were Sonny and Sable, and neither one of them could put together a match to save their lives.
Yep, that's for damn sure. But, yeah, I just wanted to give a particular highlight to that. I mean, she's come out, talked more about Putin, you know, more and more as weeks progress, but tonight she just went in on America. She called the president flaccid. She called. It was just wow. It was, you know, I wasn't offended. I don't want people to think that I was just like, damn, this is awesome. Who else can do that? You know, no one could do that anymore. Not even the male, you know, like gender when he was I don't even want to call it a prime, but when he was actually a character. It just Lana is pretty much untouchable right now.
The best line for me was, President Obama is what we would call a sissy boy.
Yes.
I'm out laughing at that. All right, I got to call the first one. You call the second one here. We're going into our second commercial break here. We'll be back with Harry's Hit, the third do, and the last thing we want to touch on for all as well as your final reaction. Tony, call the music. And don't pull a chat. Actually pick something we have.
No, I you know, the whole music thing is just, you know, sometimes I just feel like clicking play and just walking away. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, that was an abrupt finish. Back in the Raw reaction, everybody. I'm Harry Broadhurst. He's Tony Acero. I think you're still Tony, right?
Still me, man.
All right. It's time for Harry's Hit, which, by the way, thanks to Greg DeMarco, we still don't have a sound effect for. Killing us, DeMarco.
Well, you're a Greg DeMarco guy, so you're kind of more inclined to be on.
I am a Greg DeMarco guy.
Damn!
My exact feelings about this whole lack of intro, lack of soundbite music. Anywho, so we talked about people taking crap and making it work. Is there a better example of that in the WWE right now than Damian Sandow? They are going to turn Damian Sandow babyface. I don't know if that's the intent. I don't know if that's where they're hoping that this will go there, but you can hear the crowds louder and louder in sympathy, cheering and rooting and chanting even tonight for Sandow. I've made it no secret on the show. I am a huge supporter of Damian Sandow. I loved his stuff in OVW with Aaron the Idol Stevens. I was okay with his stuff as a teacher's pet with Michelle McCool. Yeah. I have been a fan of the Damian Sandow character since it debuted. And I've always felt that he never got the proper credit that he deserved for doing the job that he did in order to establish himself and Cody Rhodes as upper mid-carders when they were having their feud over Sandow's Money in the Bank briefcase. Ever since Sandow lost his Money in the Bank match, he's been in a tailspin. And it is unfortunate for me to see this because so talented, so much potential, great on the mic, great character, very fluid in the ring, seamless transitions between all three of those things there, and yet they just can't put anything together there. Do you think the time is right for a Damian Sandow babyface turn? And if it happens, could the same thing happen to him that happened to like a guy like a Dolph Ziggler or a Zack Ryder where they finally got the turn and it flopped, or do you think Sandow could be something more?
Sandow's at a level where it's not going to fully depend on him. They'll believe in him or they won't. However, we've heard stories about the WWE giving someone a losing streak or multi-changes in their personalities or whatever it may be, as almost as a test, like a rite of passage, like, you know, to see if they can handle that and then eventually give them something bigger. I don't know if that's true. I find it a very horrible way to manage any type of talent in any type of work environment. But if that is what they're doing right now, then I just have to applaud Sandow for, you know, taking the big bag of shit that they gave him and turning it into, you know, at least some semblance of hilarity. I mean, the dude dancing out there right, you know, tonight was just like, it was like I wanted to hate it. I did. I looked at it. I'm like, man, what are they doing? What is this even like? Why? What is the purpose of this? It's not that funny. What's going on? I wanted to talk badly about it, but he just dove right into it to the point where I was like, I can't get mad at him at all. You know, the Davy Crockett thing, this, him ripping on, you know, on you know, blowing a Big Show, like, it was just everything that he's done so far is just, it's like borderline horrible, yet he's doing it so well that, you know, you gotta clap for him, you gotta cheer for him, and that's what the crowd is doing. Will he be a good babyface? I think he would be. I really feel bad that they won't continue on with the intellectual savior gimmick. I think that there's so much more that he can do with that. I think that he did a lot with it. But you're right, he's been floundering for a while now, and it's really unfortunate, but he's doing everything he can to make it something, and I think that that deserves some sort of recognition.
You're welcome!
Thank you for allowing me to point that out. No, but in seriousness here, I think the reason that they're stepping away from the intellectual savior gimmick is because they have a guy down at NXT who's apparently very close to a call-up as well, named Aiden English, who does a gimmick that was very similar in addition to being a classical Broadway singer as well. So I think that's the reason that they took Sandow away from the intellectual savior gimmick, because of Aiden English. But yeah, exactly what you said there. Sandow's been given absolutely jack shit to work with lately, and he's been clearly making the best out of everything, and he's probably one of the more entertaining highlights on most of these episodes of Raw recently.
Yes. Off and on, But yeah.
All right. You looked parched over there, bud.
Yeah. Why don't you crack one open for me?
This dude's on the rocks.
Yes. What was I? Okay, yeah. You know, the Alicia Fox, she's still nuts. We've seen her grow into this character, and I remember mentioning it, I think it was last week or the week before, where it just kind of, it wasn't all that good. And tonight, they just made it worse. Worse to the point where I, honestly, in my opinion, I think that they cut away from it on purpose. Like, they realized how badly it was going. And what I'm referring to, in case you haven't seen it, is that Alicia Fox lost to Paige. Oksana was outside the ring with supporting Alicia. She goes in to check on her. Alicia then flips out, steals a fan's water and popcorn, and then pours the water on Oksana and throws popcorn at her and then force feeds her the popcorn and then flips between being sorry and slapping her around and then holding her from behind and then just being, like, it got uncomfortable because it wasn't funny. It wasn't intriguing. It wasn't entertaining. It was just there. And JBL made a quip to say, let's cut to the commercial before she talks or something to that effect. And although it was a joke, there was some serious in it because I feel that they did cut it because it got to the point where it was going way too long and you're like, all right, what's going to happen? And then they cut to the backstage, they cut to a little image of what's going to happen later on in the show. The question is, like, what the hell are they doing? And not only that, to a lesser degree, with Paige, what are they doing? This woman is part of a wrestling family. She's got it in her blood. They're not doing much to develop her character. Right now she's in a holding pattern with Alicia Fox. I'm not saying she needs something great, but maybe a little bit more importance on just who she is and what she's trying to bring. They did it the first week she won. Now she's just kind of there. And I don't think she needs to just be there. I think she needs to be proven as a champion. So, yeah, the basis of this entire point is, like, what the hell, pretty much.
Yeah, my thing about Alicia Fox was when the character first started, it was shocking because it just came out of nowhere that they did the thing with first with the Waller crowd and then with JBL's hat on Raw, and it was shocking because we had never seen this side of Alicia before.
As you mentioned, tonight it got to the point where it kind of seemed like it ran long from what they originally intended it to, and it kind of seemed forced as well, like the popcorn and the water just conveniently happened to be at ringside.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, the only positive I got out of it was Oksana looked all right wet.
I got the positive that Oksana actually ate something for once, which, given the fact that her body hasn't changed since she's been in the WWE, I wasn't aware that she was doing.
Yeah, and then, you know, not only that, man, but this is the second segment in one show where a diva gets food thrown at her or some type of, you know, liquid.
Oh, so many comments, so little time, not appropriate for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the fact that they did the bit earlier with Layla and Summer Rae took away from the impact of the bit there with Alicia and Oksana?
Nah, I don't think there was any impact to begin with, so it didn't take anything away. And, I mean, at least people care. The people care
Fair.
About Summer Rae and Layla, even if it's minimal, because there's an actual story there, again, even if it's minimal. But Oksana and Alicia Fox, do we care? Does anybody care that Oksana got attacked by popcorn? Like, no one cares, you know? So it came
honestly,
off as a waste of time.
And honestly, it came off kind of really cheesy, like lesbian pornish to me. Does that make sense?
I actually typed in the report, HLA, with a question mark.
So I wasn't the only one that got that vibe. Good.
No, it was like you're waiting for them to make out or something. It was really weird. Like when she was holding her face to apologize, it was just weird. It was all weird. It had to go away.
Yeah, there's just some things that you just don't want to explore there. And I've got a funny feeling that right there is just something that after tonight we're just kind of going to want to let go and forget ever happened in the first place. It's time to talk about Raw again, Tony.
Let's do it.
All right.
We'll go ahead and set it up.
All right, so the last thing that we're going to talk about from Raw tonight was your main event angle, and that was the team of Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Question Mark, who was later revealed to be John Cena, against the team of the Wyatt family. Couple things. One, I do not like the pairing of Cena with Reigns and Ambrose. It makes no continual sense because Reigns and Ambrose have always been at odds with Cena, especially since they came into the company. It was Cena and Ryback that were their two biggest targets. The only way that this thing holds water is the fact that Cena still wants to get his hands on Bray Wyatt. But the thing is Cena won the Last Man Standing match. You would think he would be done with Bray Wyatt. So I ask you two questions here, Tony. One, do you approve of Cena with Ambrose and Reigns, and two, what did you think of the match itself?
One, hell no. Two, the match is fine. I have to agree completely with what you said. There's no logical reasoning for Cena to side with them. He's not their friend. He's never shown any inkling towards that. I know he's, you know, all golden boy and everything. And also, he's already beaten Bray Wyatt. He beat him. It's over. It should be. It's done. Like, Wyatt is reborn. He's got a new vision. You know, like that was over. So if Bray Wyatt won, this would make a little bit more sense. Still doesn't make complete sense, but it would make a little bit more. The moment that Triple H announced that they were facing the Wyatts and they needed to find a partner, I knew it was going to be John Cena. And I wasn't happy about it. Not, you know, and you saw the little things, how Cena was, front and center of the graphic, how Cena was the one that's going to save the Shield to prove that they're going to be okay. I really do like that they did what they did with 3MB just to show you that Ambrose and Reigns can handle it. I almost wanted them to not even tag John Cena in, not in a heelish way, but just to prove that they, you know, they got this. But then you have to realize that the Wyatts have beat the Shield how many times? So it's really sad that they had to have...
I believe they've met four times and the Wyatts are up 3-1.
Yeah. So they needed Cena to win. And it's minimal. Hopefully it doesn't grow into anything, but the way things are going, I have a feeling that they're trying to implement Cena into the authority, which means he'll be the new anti-authority. It worked with Stone Cold. It's not going to work with John Cena. So I don't – it goes back to what I said at the beginning of the show. They feel like they need to throw him in there to add credibility to the program without realizing that the program's already strong enough. You know, the Shield has been one of the best booked teams in a long time. So why did it feel like they needed John Cena? I'm not a big, person about adding someone new to the Shield. I think that the group, if it's done, it should be done. However, third person who isn't doing much, third person who has issues with the Wyatts, someone, anyone besides John Cena, it felt like they threw him in there because they had nothing else to do with him. They weren't sure if they wanted to end the Wyatt feud. But if they did end it, where does Cena go next? Rusev isn't built up enough to be Umaga. John Cena, you know, isn't doing much now that he beat Bray Wyatt. So they're like, fuck it, let's just continue it. And that sucks because I don't think that they need it. I don't think that Reigns and Ambrose need Cena anywhere near them.
All right, can I ask you a question here? If you are to continue Reigns and Ambrose is the Shield here, do you think they add a third member? And if so, who? Is there somebody on the roster right now that you could possibly see filling the void that was left by Seth Rollins in the group?
Not really. I'm not a big fan of adding new people to groups, in life and in wrestling. It is what it is. Once that group is done, then they move on. And I feel, I don't know what Triple H was alluding to when he said that this is the last night you'll see the Shield together. Like, I don't know if that was, at first I thought they were going to make Ambrose turn too, but not after that promo, not the way he was, you know, with the way he acted and everything. So I didn't see that come. That was a small blip, and then it just went away. However, what does that mean? And you have to, I mean, I don't know if you were waiting for something big to happen, but I was waiting for anything to happen. And then once I saw the little graphic show that the show was over, I'm like, okay, well, you know, you saw Triple H standing in the background with Rollins, and then that was kind of it. Now, is that a cliffhanger? I don't want to go that far, but it did make me think, like, well, what's going to happen? like, do they run out of time? What's going on here? So I thought that was interesting. But no, as far as adding a third member, no, I have no interest in seeing someone new or old being added to the Shield. It was a look at the way Ambrose acted when they won. It was like, yes, we proved that we don't need Rollins. Like, he hugged Reigns, and like they act like brothers, if you will. And I don't think you can just bring someone into that. You just can't.
Because the original plan, from what I remember hearing, was that they wanted to add Mason Ryan to the group when they were originally going to turn Roman Reigns. Yeah, thankfully Mason Ryan has been released, and that's no longer a problem. But yeah, I agree. I don't think at this point you can add anybody else to the Shield. You might be able to continue Ambrose and Reigns on as a tag team a little bit further down the road, but with Reigns currently set to get the Rocket push by the looks of things, especially with the rumored match of him and Triple H at SummerSlam, and there's even talk going around that The Rock wants to have a match with Roman Reigns as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that we're going to see anything further as far as the Shield goes. We might not necessarily see any kind of a split between Rollins or between Ambrose and Reigns, but at the same time, I don't think we're going to see them pick up a third member for the group to continue the legacy of the Shield as well.
Yeah. And you know, they can do something really awesome with them too. Like, you know, the parting of ways in which they shake hands and like say, you know, good luck out there. Something cheesy but powerful. Like, I really do see it happening, and that would be awesome. It was like I said a while ago, where if the team did break up, if all three of them like just organically grew into something on their own, then it'd be really cool to see. And it looks like we're going that route with just a little bit of a twist.
Real quick, Harry's hit here, and then we'll step into the final reaction, okay?
Okay.
All right. We keep building up Rusev is this heel of anti-American, pro-Russian, whatever you want to call him. And I think we saw something tonight that I think could possibly lead to something interesting down the road.
Mm.
Could we be looking at a potential babyface turn for one Jack Swagger?
I don't know. Are you referring to the slaps that Zeb gave him?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they've gone down that road before with Zeb Coulter slapping him. But it led to Swagger getting super fired up tonight and then making very short work of Santino.
Right.
Do you think there would be anything there to a Swagger and Rusev feud?
Well, I think if there was a feud, it would just be so that Rusev can win over someone who has some semblance of a name. And if that's the case, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I think he needs it. I think he needs something. There's only so many Zack Ryders you can be. and, you know, Lana can only do so much in terms of building up the person. They have to focus on him at one point or another. So, yeah, if the rumors are true that they want him to have some sort of Umaga build to eventually fight Cena, then they're going to need something. And I think, I hadn't even considered it, but I think a face Swagger who is a real American going up against, you know, Rusev, who now lives in Moscow, would be just a story that writes itself.
I had heard talk of them possibly wanting to do Rusev and Mark Henry, and I actually think that Jack Swagger's the better of the two options here. Don't get me wrong, I've enjoyed Henry since his return, and especially since he came back during the Hall of Pain stuff as well, much more than at any point prior to that. But I just think that Swagger would make for a much more entertaining and much more watchable contest against a guy like Rusev than a guy like Mark Henry would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree.
It's time for your final reaction. First or second, Tony? Call it.
I'll take the second.
All right. B minus. And the reason I say B minus is because we saw the further developing of several important angles, but at the same time, we kind of stayed stuck in a rut as far as other ones go. Them giving Randy Orton the night off very seriously hurt the progress of Rollins and Orton against Ambrose and Reigns, because I think that if Orton were there tonight, that's something that we would have definitely seen furthered. We saw the continuation of the rise of Alexander Rusev, or just Rusev now, pardon me. We saw the Usos get a very good win, and we also saw Ryback Soul pick up a win in their home state, which surprised me because usually you lose at home.
So I got a feeling that we might be looking at Ryback and the Usos down the road as well for the tag titles. Even though I've said before, and I still stand by this, that the team that needs to take the tag titles off of the Usos needs to be the Wyatt family, referring to Harper and Rowan. That said, we had several really good matches in the ring tonight. We had Paige finally being made to look like a dominant force tonight, which I approved of. We had the continuation of things that needed to happen, as well as the off-the-wall shenanigans of one Damian Sandow. The Alicia Fox and Oksana stuff, as you said, ran long, but at the same time there, you got to have a piss break somewhere. And that's the simple fact of it there. Once the match with Paige ended, I went and used the restroom, so it was whatever to me.
Yeah.
But anyway,
well,
that tells you how long it ran that I was able to get back to the television and see all of what I did see, even after going to use the restroom.
Yeah.
So I'm
going
to go with a B minus.
Okay. Yeah, I think my rating would be right around there as well. I wasn't bored. It was definitely an entertaining, you know, it started off with some good matches. There was a little bit of a lull in the middle of it, mainly because, you know, there's just stuff I wasn't interested in. But a B minus sounds about right. I really do feel that that's right on the money in terms of a grade for the show. It was above average, but just barely, and there was some stuff that really bogged it down. So I'd stick with that.
And like you said there, especially with the opening promo dragging as much as it did, because we've seen Triple H and Stephanie do much better work individually than when they're in the ring together.
Right.
You got anything else, Tony?
No, that's it.
All right, that'll do it for us here. He's Tony Acero. I'm Harry Broadhurst. We want to thank you for listening to the Raw Reaction. We will be back here next Monday night, June 16th. As we continue here, the Raw Reaction, once again, we want to thank you for listening. And we want to encourage you to check out the Greg DeMarco Show tomorrow evening, the Thursday Night Destruction, as well as Heartbeat Radio this Sunday. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next Monday. Good night. The Raw Reaction, a production of Powerhouse Radio, www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. We will see you tomorrow night for the Greg DeMarco Show on Blog Talk Radio.